Pardon me?
That one's 5 minutes slower than that one.
Oh, well, I'll go, this one tells me I'm 8 minutes behind schedule, so. All right, next paper is agenda paper four, negative interest rates.
Save me a world.
Wish I could get some of those.
So we start?
My borrow, I said I wish I'd get them on my borrowing.
Yeah, I was wondering, babe.
I don't want to get them on my assets, but I'd like to be able to borrow with a negative interest rate.
Shall we start off?
Please.
Okay. Okay, let me explain our paper briefly. The Interpretations Committee has already discussed the issue of income statement presentation when interest rates are negative twice, in September 2012 and in January 2013. In January 2013, the committee decided against finalizing the tentative agenda decision, as it could have unintended consequences on the classification of financial assets in accordance with IFRS 9, which was then subject to limited scope amendments. The committee therefore decided to refrain from finalizing the tentative agenda decision until the IASB has completed its lead deliberations on IFRS 9. The staff revisited the issue, taking two recent developments into account. They are, first, finalization of IFRS 9, and second, spread of issue from negative effective interest rates to negative monetary policy rates in European Central Bank and market transaction rates such as Euribor. Let me explain how the staff analyzed implications of these new developments. First, the finalization of IFRS 9 clarified that having a negative interest rate does not prevent the contractual cash flows from being solely payments of principal and interest on the principal amount outstanding, so-called SPPI test. The staff now believe that this issue would not have unintended consequence on classification of financial assets. Second, reflecting the spread of negative rates to monetary policy and market transaction rates, the staff now think the custody cost works just as a floor below which entities would choose to hold cash, while previously custody cost was considered to be the driver of negative interest rates. However, it does not change our analysis on the presentation of negative interest rates being based on existing standards, including IAS 18 and IAS 39. In other words, the fact that now nominal or contractual interest rates are negative does not make any difference from the past circumstance where only effective interest rates are negative. This means that the expense arising on financial asset because of a negative interest rate should not be presented as interest revenue or interest expense, because it does not meet the definition of interest revenue or interest expense. Instead, it should be presented in some other appropriate expense classification as a separate line item. This is because of two reasons, as previously discussed at the Interpretations Committee. First, IAS 18 is clear that interest rate cannot be negative in terms of outflow of economic benefits. Second, IAS 1 requirements prohibit offsetting of income and expense unless it is required or permitted by IFRS. The issue of presentation when interest rates are negative for financial assets, i.e. gross outflow from assets, can be extended to financial liabilities, i.e. gross inflow from liabilities, because they are symmetric phenomena. The staff also consider using the thinking in IFRS 9 as a guide which considers negative interest rates as interest It is possible to include these separate line items as part of the net interest income or its equivalent. Here, let me turn to Kumar.
Okay, before we open it up, just we have asked also the IFRIC about re-exposure. And what I was proposing, if Wayne's okay with that, is that let's discuss where the IFRIC Interpretation Committee gets to, and then we can ask the Interpretations Committee whether you think, given the decision that you'll come to, whether we need to re-expose or not. Is that okay with everybody? Although we have asked the question in the other order. Yeah?
Okay.
That's it.
So the key, if as I understand it, to your recommendation, is notwithstanding the fact that this meets the definition of neither interest income nor interest expense, it still is a component of interest margin.
Shown separately.
As a separate line item within interest margin, as opposed to be as shown as a separate line item following salary expense or whatever. And so that it belongs in that section of the income statement.
We are not saying it belongs. We are saying the entity could choose to. We haven't said this has to be. This is one of the things which we would like the IFRIC to consider. But okay. Yes, using and analogizing to IFRS 9, which says that negative interest is interest, that's where we came to. But the challenge we have is putting them as interest revenue or interest expense, because that's where we believe it clearly violates the requirements which is there in IS 18. So it cannot be interest revenue or interest expense, but should be shown separately. One possible option which we are saying could be given as a guidance to the constituents is that you could put it as part of before NIM so that you do not take it out of net interest income or net interest margin. Obviously, all of this applies if it is material.
Okay. Comments from the committee? Charlotte?
I think I've got confused in your analysis between the link between IFRS 9, which clearly says you can have negative interest income, or it's an element that goes into EIR, which then flows into IFRS 7, which talks about how you disclose it and says you disclose interest income and interest expense using EIR, to then the fact that that doesn't flow in to your income statement at all, but I can put another line in somewhere. I don't think people have considered it. I don't think it comes across in the agenda decision. And to be honest, it doesn't really
come through.
Make sense. So.
I think we covered this in the first paper when we were doing, when we look at an EIR, that's an allocation mechanism. That's how you look at allocating, and you could have positive, negative, whatever it is. IFRS 7 gives you guide to presentation and netting. Whenever you talk, you cannot net things down over there. So if I look at what is the definition of revenue, we went back to IS 18, which has been the previous IFRIC decision as well. So we haven't changed any of those things.
If I didn't agree with the last. And the interest income and interest expense in IFRS 7 are calculated on the EIR method.
It's a calculation method.
So therefore those discounts, whatever that negative interest, will flow into those because it's part of the effective interest method. But then it seems to also want to go somewhere else as another cost. And I think it's just not clear to me how those all tie up. And I don't think the paper does that analysis. It just sort of says IFRS 9 doesn't talk about presentation, when it's all clearly supposed to tie in.
So,
jump in to support Kumar's position. So for me, IFRS 9 talks about how to calculate amounts on the balance sheet and how to calculate amounts in the income statement. And it sets out the circumstances in which the board thought it was appropriate to use an allocation mechanism using the effective interest method. So all it's saying is, when do you use fair value and when do you use the effective interest method to calculate amounts that turn up in the income statement. So I agree with the staff that saying that that calculation approach is accurate and follows IFRS 9, but IFRS 9 doesn't then seek to say what line items do things go in. And looking at the ones where it's at its most basic level, I wouldn't even, you know, I agree with the analysis in terms of IAS 18 because it's very specific on what interest revenue is. But even if you go back to the conceptual framework, if we look at the easiest case and the case that sort of originated the original question, which was, if I'm paying somebody when I've invested in an asset, can I stick an income label on that? If you look at the conceptual framework, it says income is an increase in assets. So putting a negative amount that you're earning holding an asset in a revenue line item just isn't consistent with our conceptual framework.
It's also IFRS 9, it's tying into IFRS 7 and the link there, which IFRS 7 has set disclosure requirements and talks about which lines you put it in other comprehensive income. And
I don't think it says whenever you use an effective interest method, that has to be put in an interest revenue line.
With the total interest income and total interest expense calculated using effective interest,
but that's not the same as saying every time I use the effective interest method, it needs to go in that line item. It's saying if you're presenting interest, it needs to be calculated using that approach. That's what 7's saying.
We use EIR on a number of circumstances. It's effectively the internal rate of return. But every time I use EIR, maybe when I'm looking at impairment or other things, that doesn't mean anything that comes in will go into interest revenue or interest expense. That's the distinction we are trying to make. And fundamentally, if I look at IAS 18, I think that's where the biggest definitional challenge for us when I'm trying to interpret the standards come up. We have also said that maybe this was not envisaged when the board was looking at it. This is the brave new world. But that would require an amendment which the board can do, not an interpretation where I can override 18.
Okay. Tony, since your mic is on already, you go next. Or did you want to go? No, your mic was on for soon. Okay, Andrew?
Well, I think negative interest is different, and therefore what's important is that it is presented or disclosed in a transparent manner. I think if I'm reading the draft agenda notice correctly, it says it can't be an interest expense and it can't be interest income, but it can be part of net interest.
Two separate.
Now, I would struggle to explain that to the man on the Clapham omnibus, as we say. To my knowledge, IFRS 9 is the first time that the kind of economic phenomenon of negative interest rates has been explicitly acknowledged in IFRS. And in that context, I find the analysis here is resting too much on IAS 18 definitions of net interest income. I'm not sure if interest expense is even defined. Where does it say interest expense can only arise on a liability?
It doesn't, but we have used the symmetric. I agree with you, but here's the other thing which we'd... What one of the challenges which we are trying to come in, and Andrew, I absolutely agree that we are saying this is not interest, why do you keep it part of NIM? Because that's what one of the challenges we were trying to do. How do you then, are you happy then take it out of the entire margin that a bank earns and showing it separately?
We have principles in IAS 1 on when you would consider creating a separate line item, and I think where this is material, there'll be a strong argument that this should be
that.
A separate line item to other types of interest expense. But to say it's not a type of interest expense in the absence of some robust guidance that says that, and in the wake of what IFRS 9 says about negative interest, I find that's a stretch, and I'd rather just emphasise transparent presentation or disclosure.
So one of the things which, let me clarify this, what I'm hearing is that you're okay for it not to be part of the revenue line items, but you do not want to go further than that and say that where it should be disclosed, and you would prefer it to be as per the general principles.
Absolutely, and I also just don't find it particularly helpful to be very precise on what it can't be, but rather fuzzy on what it can be.
Okay.
Well, I don't see how it cannot, under the conceptual framework, as Sue said, it can't be revenue.
It can't be. I mean, I think...
I do buy that, but the statement it can't be interest expense, I struggle with.
But
and
if
then
I
to go on to say it can be part of net interest income or expense seems inconsistent.
Okay. Going around the room, I think...
Can I? I think, Reinhard, thanks for your comments. I think... Would I be wrong in saying that you are not very far off from the comments you sent us on where Andrew is, that do not be too prescriptive about where you put those other line items, but clarify that cannot be in expense and income, and let then materiality and judgment take over and be disclosed somewhere else? Am I...
That's exactly what I was going to say. And because I think, as Andrew pointed out, I found it troubling to say, you know, the negative interest on an asset isn't interest revenue, but it can be part of net interest net interest. There's a disconnect, a logical leap there that I think is hard to explain to someone. So I'm very much in the same point where Andrew is. No, I get to call them.
I'm not calling you, I was calling you.
All right, let's keep going around the room and then we'll come back, Martin, to you at the end of the circle. Bruce, you're next.
Thanks. I was just going to support what you said earlier. I guess the one thing that just leading on from that was obviously in the agenda decision. I mean, I just do think that paragraph where we're saying the following is considered appropriate is just way too prescriptive for that. So just saying, you know, we need to take all this into account.
John?
I don't think it can be revenue. I think it would be an abrogation of the conceptual framework to call it revenue. So I think that's pretty clear. I wouldn't get into including it in NIM. NIM is a non-GAAP measure. We don't comment whether it should be included in EBITDA or EBIT. So why would we comment on whether it's included in net interest margin? I would be completely silent and just emphasize the disclosure of it if it's material and it's necessary to an understanding of users of the financial performance.
Sandra, and then Reinhardt, did you have anything else you wanted to say? Okay, Sandra?
I guess my comments, John sort of stole my thunder there, we don't really define what NIM is. I guess as I look at it and say, it would beg the question, if you separated it out, what was the average assets that you earned that yield on, right? Because the theory of calculating the NIM is so that I can calculate the ratios on the return on assets and the return on liabilities, right? But I'm just curious, you know, I look at this and sort of, you know, laugh and say, well, if I'm going to pay somebody, why don't I just take the money out of the bank and see what it costs to put it in a safe deposit box, right? What's more expensive? The problem is I can't get it back in the banking system, right, because of all the money laundering. Would I then put that in NIM, that safe deposit box? If I could take it out and I could feel reassured that I could get it back in, would I put the safe deposit fees, or if I put it in my mattress and didn't pay the safe deposit fees, I wouldn't, you know, lucky I wouldn't have to record any economic event, right? I didn't have to pay anybody for anything. I just have to maybe get a security system for my house, right? But I don't know if I would, you know, take it to that extreme to sort of illustrate the point of what would that be, right? I would still record those assets on my balance sheet. I think it's more important that it just be disclosed somewhere. So I'm not so keen on just applying the measures of judgment, because I do think it's sort of different and it's sort of unique. But, you know, certainly there's going to be measures of judgment that have to be applied to it. But it is so unique that I can't imagine that users of the financial statements wouldn't know what assets do you have that are producing a negative return for you. And that would be certainly an interesting
question.
You know, I read this and say, you know, the whole discussion about pension liabilities is interesting all over again, right? Particularly if you use a debt, because they're actually going to get bigger. And that's an interesting question. But I mean, to me, it's more important that it be transparent. And I'd be curious as to what the assets are. I mean, I would think a user would be curious as to what the assets are that are associated with that negative number.
Question to the staff. One of the pieces of the previous discussion that I remember, to the extent that I remember things, was the comment that this has to be a transient phenomenon. Phenomenon.
That's a hope.
That's a hope.
I hope that too.
Well, because at some point people are going to decide it's cheaper to pay Mr. Knuckles to watch after your mattress than it
is. But you can't take the money out of the system is the problem.
Well, and then you have the, I guess, whole series of other costs that you would incur. But long term, you cannot have a system short of breakdown that has this phenomenon, that has a large fraction of its assets at a negative interest rate. That's always been the economic theory.
Has been, but don't want to predict how long this will last, we hope. But all I can tell you is if I look at the forward rates that are running in Europe and I'm looking at the FRAs, so 3 months, 3 years starting interest rates for a 3-month period, They're still running negative.
They're still running negative, okay.
So I don't want to predict. There's also what Sandra so eloquently put up is the custody cost hypothesis, and what ECB has now argued is that that's what sets the floor. As soon as that somebody set negative interest rates, which is anything different from that, where people will literally pull money out, banks will, and put it in vaults because it's cheaper to hold so. And then we get into the transmission mechanism of that thing, Wayne, but that's different. So I don't think we can...
That gets into a discussion that's way too funky for this group.
Yeah, I can start talking about secular stagnation, which may not be that wise.
Hey, Long?
I agree with the staff recommendation and how the negative interest on the potential assets presented should be based on the specific facts and circumstances. In China, and if an individual or companies play intrabank with a deposit with less than certain amount, and a certain sum of will be deducted from the deposit, and maybe so it could be called negative interest, and it may not be appropriate to present it as an interest income or interest expense. It could be deemed as a different kind of a custom.
Okay. Martin, Tony, and then Ton.
Yeah, I guess we should consider how robust our discussion is also with regard to IFRS 15. The whole argumentation here we base on our IRS 18. IFRS 15 is at least labeled in another way, revenue from contracts with customers. So that could lead to another conclusion. Anyhow, if we have an issue with the framework, then I agree that there we have the severe issue, which we should fix. However, IFRS 9, in a way, considers issues of net interest income. So in a way, we are not that consistent with the view of IFRS 9 and the framework. The question is whether we could solve this issue from an interpretation on the basis of an interpretation or on the basis of a kind of, say, amendment based on more the economic view of this issue. And the economic view is, would negative interest be part of net interest result? And anyone probably would agree on this. Therefore, I guess we should not disregard this issue and just having a technical debate on a kind of interpretation which then later on is not useful.
Tony?
I guess I'm going to echo some of the things that other people said, and I think there is a trade-off here between explaining clearly what's going on and also thinking about what the standards and what the framework says. So I think Andrew said that if negative interest is material, it's important people understand how much it is and where it's arisen. And so I think that is probably what's driving most of my thinking here. I understand that if you look at the definition in IS 18, you look at the definition in the framework, it is hard to see negative interest on an asset, on a liability, sorry, as being revenue or income. I also understand the guidance in IS 1 about offsetting. And so I think we need to take those into account, but we also need to balance them. Because I think there are a couple of logical inconsistencies in saying, well, okay, we can include it in net interest, but it's not interest income or interest expense. I mean, I struggle with the logic for saying that. And I think the analysis overreaches itself when it gets into something which isn't defined, which is interest expense. And so I wonder if the analysis has gone a step too far. I understand the piece about revenue, I understand the piece about offsetting, but I wonder if it then goes a step too far and gets too prescriptive. Mm-hmm. And certainly the last part of that agenda decision, to my mind, is too prescriptive.
Fair.
I think I'd rather direct people to what the literature says, but then emphasise it's important people can understand the impact of what is obviously a new economic phenomenon. And so the disclosures and the presentation allow people to understand that. And I guess, finally, I think John said it, net interest margin isn't defined anywhere. So I think companies are free to include pretty much what they want in there as long as they're clear about what they've done.
That's not having a debit and a revenue line item.
Don?
Yeah. Thank you. We would like to refer to the ESMA report on the comparability of financial statements of financial institutions, which we ESMA issued by the end of November 2013. One of the findings was about net interest margin, and what was indicated in the report is that there is a lot of divergence in what is included in net interest margin, because of the fact that there is no definition what is net interest margin. So we were wondering whether this interpretation wouldn't go a stop, or interpretation, the rejection wouldn't go a stop too far by saying that it should be reported in as a specific line item in net interest margin. And for example, what we saw is that interest on bonds, for example, help trading. Some financial institutions report those interests as interest income, others do it as financial results, that kind of thing. So there is diversity in practice in what is in them, and we believe that the most important thing is that there will be a definition of net interest margin rather than keeping the definition unclear at the moment, because now we see that there is divergence in practice and the comparability of what is interest income in P&L of financial institutions is rather difficult. So we would like to recall what we said in our report. There should be an improvement. Thank you.
That would significantly go beyond what's
exactly
encompassed
that's
in this
fair.
Paper.
Yeah.
So, okay. Are you eager to jump in here?
What I'm hearing is that people are happy with IS 18, with the revenue and the expense side, but don't go beyond that. With that, which is fair, we can bring it back, draft it. I think it's not inconsistent with where the IFRIC went before, what we were showing. But one question before I go out. We have analogized on the expense side that you shouldn't be putting the income which is arising from liabilities, which is a reality today because of the netting. So it shouldn't be part. Are people comfortable with that? Because Tony, I thought you said that we shouldn't be even looking to expenses. We should just say that it shouldn't be interest revenue.
That's where I'm.
No,
Tony's affirming that.
Yeah.
All right. Question for the staff then. Given that Tony was the first one to actually, in my recollection, to speak to the content of the agenda decision, rather than more general terms about the paper. My takeaway is that I don't know what we would say now that we didn't say then.
Exactly.
And so we would just be reaffirming
exactly
the previous agenda decision.
Do we need re-exposure? I wouldn't have thought so.
Well, I don't know. We need to, that. That's another question. But is the sense of the committee that all we need to do is to reaffirm our previous decision? Andrew, you have a look of an intense concern about how I say that. So you go ahead.
Well, I think I don't recall exactly what the previous decision, but I think I'm hearing that we're not comfortable saying it can't be an interest expense of some sort, and we shouldn't refer to inclusion in an undefined subtotal.
Yeah.
Sue?
I don't know if I can remember what was in the previous one, but I would have thought that the main takeaways seem to be from the committee's discussion, confirmation that you can't have a debit and a revenue line item. And I think confirmation of this idea of not having offsetting within items, which is an IS one.
Exactly.
Is that the gist of it?
That's the gist of it. Exactly the gist of it. Does not meet the definition of interest revenue because it reflects that. It also noted the amount is not an interest expense because it arises on a financial asset instead of a financial liability of the entity. Consequently, expense arising on a because of a negative interest should not be presented as interest revenue or interest expense, but in some other appropriate expense classification. That's where the last time agenda wording. I will certainly circulate that, which is there. Which
is pretty much what this one says.
This one says, yes. And stop, it's truncating that and stopping, as Tony put it, don't go beyond and overreach with the analysis.
Charlotte?
Yeah, I agree with what's just been said on that, but I wasn't actually sure what was exposed last time in terms of the agenda decision, whether it was up for comment or was just not finalised, or whether people would have commented.
It had been exposed. We had comment letters.
It had been exposed, but it had not been finalised?
It had not been finalised after review of the comment letter analysis, so it was held.
Because I thought there was some delay in the agenda. Okay. It was always going to come back, which I think was what people, other banks I knew, I thought so.
Okay, just the first paper on this was September. Then in January, after the agenda decision had been put up for exposure, there was a comment letter analysis. The staff recommended that this get finalized. It was held back because of IFRS 9 issues, because that was what was said, that IFRS 9 is looking at it, as Yuji pointed out. What I was reading out to you and what is there in the current agenda decision is what was proposed at that meeting. Nothing's changed from there. And that is reflecting to the first meeting as well.
Essentially, when 9 didn't turn out to cause us any problem. Can we do something unusual here? Between now and after lunch, can you run off a bunch of copies of what was proposed the first time around in terms of an agenda decision? I'd like to reopen this topic then, because if we can wrap based on what we thought was the right answer a few months ago, let's do that.
So just let me, I'll bring back the agenda decision, which was agenda rejection wording that was exposed. What was proposed as the agenda rejection wording after the comment letter analysis last time.
Okay, that's fine. Two pages.
2 pages?
Yep.
It'll be with you.
We can all read 2 pages over lunch.
Okay, so.
Charlotte, last comment?
I think it's still on from before.
Okay. All right, let's take a break. Okay. Let's try and be back at 10 after. We're running behind.
Do we come back after lunch?